and ask how easy it is to get eternal inflation in these models. So this work was done in collaboration with Xingang Chen, Henry Tai, and Henry's grad student, Jiajun Xu. Xingang is a postdoc at Cornell. All the three of them are at Cornell. So let me quickly do a review of eternal inflation in field theory, as was initially proposed by Linde, Olenk, and others. So imagine a scalar field phi, which has the potential u of phi, and imagine that it has some kind of a parabolic shape like this. If you leave the scalar field somewhere up on the potential, then classically you expect it to roll down, simply because of the gradient of the potential. And the classical change in the scalar field, delta phi, is simply the velocity of the scalar field, phi dot, times the time period, H inverse. So delta phi tells you the change, the classical change of the scalar field in one Hubble time. Now, since we're talking about inflation, and u of phi is sourcing the de Sitter Hubble constant, therefore there is a quantum fluctuation in the scalar field phi given by this delta phi, and that in turn is given by h over 2 pi. And we know that h squared is proportional to how high up you are on this potential, right? So if you are somewhere up here, then the quantum kick in the scalar field is high, whereas if you are down here, the quantum kick in the scalar field is small. And we want to figure out if the quantum fluctuations with are the classical change in scalar field winds. Now, if phi is greater than some critical value of phi c, that is, if the scalar field is somewhere up here, then the quantum fluctuation of the scalar field will win over the classical change in the value of the scalar field. And such regions of the universe, such Hubble patches, can easily get stuck doing some kind of a random walk. And that leads to eternally inflating regions of space-time. So that's the basic idea. And you can look at some potential with a more traditional slow roll shape like this. So inflation happens when the scalar field rolls down on this flat part of the potential, and inflation ends when the inflaton is down here and doing reheating. And if you are somewhere up here, where phi is less than phi c, then the potential is so flat that the quantum fluctuation wins over the classical motion of the scalar field, and the scalar field just does some kind of a random motion here. Again, that's eternal inflation. Once in a blue moon, some lucky patch will get quantum kicks such that it can come to the right-hand side of this dotted line, and then the classical motion wins, and you get the usual slow roll inflation, at least 16 folds, and then you reheat. So this is reheating, this is the usual slow roll inflation, this is the regime of eternal inflation. Now, in general, of course, even if you are here, there is some quantum kick and inflaton, and the overall motion of the inflaton field is described by a Langevin equation, or a Fokker-Planck equation, where there is a competition going on between the classical drift of the inflaton field and the quantum kicks, which are acting on the inflaton field. And it's very easy to write down the Langevin or the Fokker-Planck equation for the kicks of the slow roll. Now, a similar picture arises when the potential has a metastable minimum with a positive valve. And what happens is the tunneling rate generically is much less than the value of the Hubble constant. And so most of the universe just stays here, stuck in some inflationary phase. Now I'm going to distinguish between two types of eternal inflation in this talk. The first one being the eternal inflation of the random walk type, and the second one being the eternal inflation of the tunneling type. And I shall really concentrate on the eternal inflation of the random walk type in simple brain inflationary models, and we shall try to find out if we can actually get this eternal inflation of random walk. Now we all have learned to live with the strain landscape. There's a growing belief that there are a lot of supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric string vacuum. And eternal inflation it's a good thing because it gives you a very natural way to populate these vacuum. You tunnel through the landscape, or you do these you do this Langevin or Fokker-Planck kind of motion, and you go all over the landscape. So it's a good thing. It gives you a way to populate these vacuum. Of course, there might be other ways of populating the stringy landscape, maybe through resonance tunneling or other ways of quantum sampling the landscape. And recently there was a paper, and there is some work in progress, so it will be out in a couple of days. And an important thing, though, that we should all keep in mind is that we need to understand the tunneling between stringy vacua better. Even when we are talking about, for example, the eternal inflation of false vacuum type, it's not clear how you can talk about tunneling between one vacuum which has standard model between another vacuum which has some other particle content. So even though we freely talk about tunneling between various regions of the landscape, one should still keep in mind that there might be much more complications there. Anyway, so let's move on. Eternal inflation populates vacua. And we shall focus on two models in this talk, the simplest KKLMMT model and the DBI model. And when I talk about DBI model, I'll talk about both the original one proposed by Silverstein and Tom, and a variant of DBI proposed by Chen. And of course, there are many other models, like the racetrack model, which uses string theory ingredients, but I'm not going to talk about those models. Okay. Now, the good thing about string-motivated inflationary models is that the UV physics is well understood in these models. In the field theory models, people freely talk about taking the inflaton all the way up on a quadratic potential, but then of course the UV effects become important, and you could not really ask what happens in that regime. Whereas in string theory models, the UV physics is well understood. And various string theory models, the good thing is, they are beginning to have their own distinguishing observational features. So DBI has non-Gaussianities, KKLMMT does not have non-Gaussianities. So if someone does an observation someday and rules out this model, let's say, then you can say make some contact with the eternal inflation predictions that come from these models. So now let me get into the details of the simplest KKLMMT brain inflationary model. So there is a Calabi out with a throat. The throat is sticking out here. And on the throat, you have an anti-brain, anti-D3 brain, and a D3 brain. And inflation happens when the D3 brain rolls down the throat and comes and annihilates the D3 brain. While the D3 brain is moving slowly on the throat, you get the V folds of the inflation, And when the brain touches the anti-brain, you get reheated. So that's the simple picture of inflation in this model. The throat geometry is given by the ADS metric, which is written right here. R is the radial coordinate, which tells you where the D3 brain is on this throat. And this part of the metric gives you the 3+1 dimensional geometry living in the anti-brain. Okay, so R is the distance between the anti-brain and the brain. And the infratron is simply the separation between the brain and the anti-brain. Here T3 is the tension of the brain on the anti-brain. So the simple picture is this guy holds down the throat, and that's what inflation is. And once these two guys touch each other, you have reheating. And the inflatron potential is given by this entire expression, which really has three parts. One is a quadratic contribution in the inflatron field. And there's a parameter beta, which characterizes the strength of this quadratic potential. There is V of A, which really is the tension of the brain-anti-brain system. It's a positive energy and it drives inflation. And VDD bar is this contribution in the potential. It goes as 1 over separation between brain-anti-brain to the power 4. So it's a Coulombic attraction. So the three parts are a kind of a quadratic potential, the tension of DD bar, and the Coulombic attraction between DD bar.
What's H?
H is the Hubble constant. So what happens is it's very hard to calculate this quadratic contribution, which is coming from various Taylor contributions. So people just say that, okay, there's a quadratic piece, and I'm going to parameterize its strength in terms of beta H squared. People have tried to explicitly calculate this, but in the more phenomenological approaches, you just say, I'm going to characterize it with beta h squared, and I'm going to figure out how small beta should be to get slow roll inflation. Because, see, this is just the slow roll part. This gives you a constant piece, this gives you some kind of an attraction piece. But this guy will tend to mess up with your inflation because this is a quadratic piece. And we will see that for slow roll inflation, beta should be between 0 and 1 over 7.
Right? 1 over 7 is observational.
So you start with this potential, and then you ask what the value of beta should be to get 6 VE folds and the right density perturbation, and you get this range.
So do you have positive and negative contribution to beta so that you can fine tune beta to the small value?
I'm not going to talk about that aspect at all. But if
you have only a positive contribution to beta, then
right.
There's no way to fine tune.
So that's right.
You have both positive and negative.
Right, yeah. But that again, people have worked on that, Boris Kors and other people, and they claim that it is possible to do to get a small beta. And you do have models where beta is simply negative, which is the IR model given by Xingan Chen. I'm going to talk about that. In Silverstein's model, beta is positive. And another thing is, even though for KKLMMT model you need small beta, when I talk about DBI models, you don't need any constants on beta. So right now when I say beta is between 0 and 1/7, I'm really talking about the slow roll KKLMMT kind of model, where you want the D brain to slowly roll down and fall into the anti D brain. So it might be that this model is fine tuned, but we'll try to merge it with DBI later, and I'm going to motivate the possibility that these models might not be fine tuned at all. But these questions are not relevant to the internal information.
One more question, where is our universe?
Yeah, sorry. So our universe is down here. So in general, this will be a stack of anti-D3 brains and D brain. So in the simplest scenario, but you.
So the heating is not going to come.
The reading thing is because of the annihilation between this brain and this anti-brain.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'm not so. My impression was we were living in some other.
Right. So that. So there are various scenarios. So we could be living in another throat, and then the annihilation happens here, and you have to figure out how energy is transferred.
That's it. But that would be a requirement of what I. It's not a requirement. It's perfectly fine that I did precisely where it is D3 and how many you smash.
Sure, if you had a stack of D-brains here, then this guy comes and smashes the anti-D3 brain. Then the question is, how do you transfer that energy into the stack that is left? That was the very simplest scenario that Diwali, Thai, etc. Had in mind. But I agree that you can, we might be living in some other throat.
I thought you wanted another third if you were one of the yard on the soul as well.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You had the constant on that, you know, if you were different soul as well.
So the more details you get into, like the hierarchy column and this and that, then you have to add an extra structure to this lobby, I'll live on other throats and so on. But right now, I'm just going to not even ask about questions about reheating or solving hierarchy column. I'm just going to ask about questions about internal information. But they are all valid questions. Now, one important thing here is notice this N here, capital N. That capital N is the background D3 brain chart that sources the walk throat geometry. And typically, it's a big number, 1,000 or 10,000, something like that, in these KKLMT models. So we will see that this the requirement of a large value of capital N will actually put constraints on the possibility of internal limitation.
So maybe usually what you are using on M?
What usually is the value of capital M?
Usually, so is it rubber gum of flux?
It's it's RR flux times NSMS.
Oh.
So N is equal to K times M, where one of them is RR, one of them is NSMS.
So it's related to Euler number?
Yes, it's related. Okay, so all you keep in mind is that this is the potential, and there's a quadratic term here, there's a slow roll part of the potential here. And beta is between 0 and 1 over 6.
So if I live at the bottom, if I'm living at the bottom of that program,
yeah,
then that does solve the. Isn't that the case where I solve the hierarchy problem?
Because
I'm living sort of at the bottom of a gravitational well, so.
I guess they wanted to have the universe down there in the other throat because they wanted to survive the cosmic stream.
Yeah, it's coming from the cosmic stream. That's
yeah,
right.
Cosmic stream.
It's, yeah, right. So the guys who we did cosmic strings,
yeah.
Yeah. It had to be in some other.
It's because we're afraid that cosmic strings might have very high tension.
They wanted the cosmic strings that happen at the end of brain and brain equations to arrive, so they put the universe in other throat so that they do not. This is just
I see.
No, you're absolutely right. So we're using first of all, there's a tension, right?
You don't want the tension to be too low, right?
Hmm?
You don't want the tension to be too low because if you're in this kind of other
tension, too high. If you live down there, then the tension of your strings will be order of the repo.
So you want a warping. You want a warping to shield from the tension. Sure, electric tension.
The other thing is, you do want cosmic string observations because
right.
It's
sorry, you want to start your
and one problem that happens is that if you live in the same throat,
yeah.
The cosmic strings can be unstable.
Right.
They will just dissolve away on the ground.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. But I remember Kalo Shanyende had written this paper where they want to have a different gravitational scale. They wanted a separation in the scale of the supersymmetry breaking and not have the gravitational problem and so on. And they motivated that that's possible when you have separate folks. So once you start asking terminological questions, there are a whole bunch of reasons why you might want to listen. Okay, so any other questions? But again, I'm not sure how well solved the questions of reheating, etc. People have a Clifford, yes, has done work, others have done work. But the question of reheating is still something people are struggling with. Especially when we start
your name.
When I talk about DBI models, I don't think anyone has worked out reheating for DBI models.
Can I ask how realistic is the particle physics model you get if I'm living this cycle?
So that again connects with the reheating story, right? How can you get a viable particle physics model after reheating? And to be frank, I don't think people have worked out the details. How efficient it is to transfer the energy into the brain we live in. I know Ira was thinking about some problems at some point.
Yeah, because it's hard to even just get a standard model right now. Much harder to get a standard model if you've got it. It's not trivial to even get a standard model to be there. You can say that it's there. Actually, it's
there. But people believe that it's just possibly embeddable in that thing.
Yeah, they believe it's possible, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible on having them as an individual.
But I don't think that's not even enough. Correo and others in Europe were working on this. Gary was working on this. How realistic it is to embed standard model-like features in these wall compactifications. But I didn't follow that. So the connection between particle physics and the standard model is something I don't know much. I think people are still working on it. Okay. So any other questions about this basic setup? Again, for eternal inflation, we have to compare the quantum kick of the inflaton field with the classical change in the value of the inflaton field over 1 Hubble time. So that's pretty easy to do. And to get eternal inflation, we want this ratio to be greater than 1. Of course, you will notice that this is nothing else but delta H, the density perturbation. So once the density perturbation is of the order of 1, you expect eternal inflation to happen. Now, there are certain constraints which you have to impose on the KK11P model, namely delta H should be order 10 to the minus 5 at 55 defaults. And another constraint is that the position of the anti-grain, which is at the which is right here, so I call it phi A. Phi A is the position of the anti-grain at the IR end. That is less than the position where inflation ends. So the inflation should end somewhere in front of the anti-grain. And that should be less than the position of the grain, which corresponds to 55 defaults, which should be somewhere here. And that in turn should be less than the position of the grain where the inflation begins. So phi sub I is the position of the grain where you get the beginning of inflation. And that should be less than the edge of the throw. So the whole story should happen in the simplest model, on the foot. So phi h is somewhere here, phi I is where your inflation begins, that is followed by phi 55, that is followed by phi reheat, and that is followed by the position of the antiheat. So just keep this kind of a relation in mind.
So what happens at phi h?
Phi h is where that's where
you lose the tron geometry. Well, so if I start the D3 at phi h, does the geometry inflate or? You started there.
If you started here, you have to tell me the shape of the potential in the ball. So, and in KKLMT, they don't talk about the shape of the potential in the ball. But again, there are models where your brain can begin in the ball. But here, I'm just looking at the basic KKLMT setup. And I'm questioning their claim, which was that you could begin inflation in the throat, inside the throat, and still you could have a So this is the throat where this geometry is valid. And in the bulk, I don't know what the geometry is. I can't write it down the metric. So they have an appendix which claims that you can have internal inflation while the whole story goes on the throat, simply by making the throat longer and longer. That will just stretch the flat size, the flat region of the potential. But that's the claim I'm questioning.
Excuse me, but how does the capital R depend on the parameter vector, and the flux, number of flux in and so on?
So capital R, up to certain numerical factors, it goes as R to the 4, goes as where T3 is the tension of the T3 is the tension of the D3. And of course phi h is related to R through this relation. So larger the value of capital R, the larger the curvature radius of radius throat, and larger is the value of phi h. Now, here I have, just for illustration, roughly drawn the shape of the potential. So this is where only the brain tension and the Coulombic attraction are important. But once you go to higher values of phi, the quadratic piece will become important. So this is where beta h squared phi squared becomes important. Whereas here, only VA plus VD phi. Now actually, if you look at the appendix of KKLMT, they don't have this piece. That's one of the reasons, of course, you can get internal inflation because it's black. So that's just the first thing. But there's another reason why we won't get internal inflation here. Okay, so now due to the Kähler contribution, which is just this quadratic piece, delta phi is bounded from below. So delta phi cannot be zero, which would have been the case if the potential could have become absolutely flat. Requiring delta phi minimum, which is the minimum value of the classical change in phi, requiring that to be less than the quantum kick in phi leads to a constraint on the Kähler parameter. So all I'm saying here is that to get internal inflation, you will have constraints on beta, which will turn out to be beta is less than 10 to the minus 8.
Sorry, can I just do it?
Yeah.
So when the VK starts fluctuating, is phi sublinear or superlinear?
So that it will turn out to be sublinear. So that's let me just write it down here. It will turn out that critical value of phi will be.
So you can trust that.
So now you can see that to get internal inflation, beta should be between 0 and 10 to the minus 8, which is a huge fine-tuning, because modelized stabilization generically gives you order 1 beta.
Even Nesbitt hasn't gave a talk here about how brain KKL11B model is compatible with observation. And using mu constraint from observation, we obtain beta of order of 10 to the power of minus 5, minus 6. So even contrasting with observation gives you a huge amount of fine-tuning. So the earlier result, the usual was related to their old paper, which was before the release of WMA 3-year data. So even if you want to contrast this model with observation, you get a huge amount of fine-tuning, even if you don't want eternal inflation.
I think it is a fine, people agree that KKL1K is fine, most of them will agree. When I talk about DBI though, we'll see that there your beta can be on the order of 100 or 1000, still you can satisfy that DBI. So Sarah Shandira, who is also, she has done a lot of simulations, and they are, what they're trying to do is, okay, leave the brain somewhere here, and as it rolls down, it will pick up high speed, and it's not slow roll anymore. So it's DBI inflation. And for DBI inflation, it's good to have a large value of beta. So there you don't run into these fine-tuning issues.
But there is there's another fine-tuning on the number of D3 brains, and it should be on order of 10 to the power of 14 as I heard. And that's not compatible, I guess.
That's right. So if you, now the thing is, more viable models will lie between KKLMT and DBI. If you look at pure DBI, I agree there are constraints. If you look at pure KKLMT, there are constraints. So what Henry and Sarah and Rachel Bean, I think they're trying to do is look at the most generic scenarios where you don't commit to pure DBI or pure KKLMT, and just run these simulations to see how natural these are. But I guess you guys should have Sarah first. Results. But I agree that once you start looking at details, many of these cases are okay. So, however, there is an even stronger constraint that actually completely rules out eternal inflation of this random walk type in the simplest KKLMT, which I'll talk about. Because even if I said that you require a very small value of beta to get eternal inflation, you can tell me that, so what? Some region of the landscape might have the right beta, even if a tiny region. And once eternal inflation begins, even if in a tiny region, it will take over eventually. So this kind of an argument doesn't really kill eternal inflation. So now let's look at the most optimistic scenario, which will allow eternal inflation, namely beta equals 0. So requiring the quantum quick kick to win over the classical drift, phi c will be this value, 0.025 times 1. However, this constraint should be satisfied. The critical value of phi, where eternal inflation begins, if we are working with the simplest KKLMT model, should be less than the value of phi edge. In other words, you want the whole story to happen on the throat. Now, here's the relation between phi edge and R. So this is the condition you want to impose. And there is another constraint, which is that R itself should be less than L. L is the size of the bulb. What this really means is that you want the throat to be contained in the full clavia. You don't, so here. You want R, so L in some sense characterizes the full extent of the colloquium. However, the throat is just a part of the colloquium. So you want R, which is the extent of the throat, to be less than L. That is, you want the throat to be contained in the colloquium. Now, so we want to satisfy this as well as this. And if you look at, if you sit down and try to work this out, you will see that to satisfy both these constraints, the V3 brain charge, capital N, should be less than 1. But for KKLMMT scenario, N, capital N, should be much greater than 1. So you try to fix everything up in a way to get internal inflation, and you can't do it. So it turns out that even in the most optimistic scenario, there is no internal inflation. And I can go into more details, maybe those questions.
Could you explain the meaning of L in more detail?
Capital N?
Yes, so it has shape. And the...
So capital N will just be the number of D3 brains at the tip.
Capital
L. So capital L, the way capital L has been defined is just this.
That part must be boring. Not L. It is anisotropic. If it's anything, anisotropic, then it's okay. I'm sure.
Sure. So you're saying that you might be able to stretch the in a way so as to get
Probably finite, but sorry, very, very long. Then it will be okay. I don't know. Why R must be smaller than L?
Why R should be smaller than L?
L is defined by.
So how would you have capital L exceed R? Like, what kind of picture do you have in mind?
I mean, you have small bar, I mean, caravilla.
Right.
And you have very long throat.
Right.
And that's from the
caravilla.
Then if the rope, this is very long, but the volume is tiny. So, Frank scale is finite.
But when you calculate the volume, you will include the volume that is contained in the throat as well, right?
Yeah, but if it's very.
Well, he said that L is the root one of, well, sixth root of the volume of calabria.
Okay.
It can be less than R.
So, it can be less than R.
For if it's not completely anisotropic, then yes.
Sure. So, but that would not correspond to KKLMMT, right? Not the kind of picture they have. I mean, I agree. So I'm actually going to talk about possibilities where you can have something in isotropic, or you can begin in the bulk and still have internal inflation. Here, the strong statement that is being made is that in the simplest scenario that KKLMMT talked about and said that there is internal inflation, generically, we claim that there's actually, in that simplest scenario, there's no internal inflation. I agree that you can tweak models more and you can get internal inflation. So I'm saying that the appendix is fine. In KKM, they agree with us. So, okay. So now let me go to a DBI model. How much time do I have?
Well, it's
only 3, but you can go. So as someone said, KKLMMT model generically have this problem that beta should be very small, we are fine-tuned. So people have proposed the DBI model. And now let's see if the DBI model, how easy it is to get eternal inflation in DBI model. So here's the action for the DBI model, where you integrate over the brain volume. Here's the tension of the brain, and here's the DBI action. V is the velocity of the brain as it moves down the throat. So I still have the similar kind of picture, which I showed you 3 or 4 slides ago, except now we have to take into account the complete DBI dimension. V of phi is kind of similar looking to the form I wrote down 3 or 4 slides ago, except there are these gamma factors here, where gamma is the relativistic factor. And small h of phi is just a warp factor, depending on where you sit on the globe. So here's the complete action. You can see that when the velocities are small, then gamma goes to 1, and you recover the potential that we saw a few slides ago for KKR limit T. This has been worked out by Sarah Shandira and Henry Tai in one of their papers. Now, to study the motion of the relativistic brain now, which is moving down the throat towards the anti-brain, it's nice to use the Hamilton-Jacobi approach. And basically, you try to solve this equation, phi dot equals the derivative of h of phi over gamma phi, and this equation of motion is subject to certain constants. For ultra-relativistic motion, beta is much greater than 1. So you require a large value of beta. So the very qualitative way to understand DBI UV model is that, and this is a UV model because your brain is starting at the UV end of the throat. So the very qualitative way to understand it is, you have a large value of beta, so there is a large gradient in the potential. Here's the anti-brain sitting at the tip of the potential. Here's the brain. The brain sees a large gradient, so it starts moving very fast. Now, in the 1980s and 90s, when you didn't talk about these DBI actions, you would just say, okay, a large beta will just give the brain a large velocity, and it will fall down very fast, hence not giving you sufficient number of neurons. But now you say, wait a minute, there's a DBI action, I can only move so fast, I can never exceed the local speed of light on the warp throat. Therefore, there's a speed limit which will restrict how quickly I can fall down and annihilate the anti-brain at the tip of the throat. And that will help me get sufficient number of neurons. Even though beta is very large, and you expect the brain to roll down very fast. So it's really the speed of light limit that helps you get the right number of EFOs for DBI models. An important thing, which is actually a source of confusion for many, is that this is not K inflation. DBI inflation is not K inflation. In K inflation, it's the kinetic energy, the kinetic current that sources the D-sitter and gives you power law inflation, not the potential energy. Whereas for a DBI model, it's not the kinetic energy, but actually the potential energy, V of phi, that sources the inflation. But the only role of the kinetic term, which is a crucial role, is to give you the speed of light limit. It prevents you from falling very fast. So that's the DBI model. It's different from K-inflation, different from slow OKK element. Now, what happens here is that if you look at the late time behavior of these equations, then phi dot goes as minus phi squared, and you get a power law inflation just by plugging values. A of t goes as t to the 1 over epsilon, where epsilon is the slow roll parameter. And you impose delta h to be 10 to the minus 5. And it happens that it gets fixed there. Delta H does not grow as you send the brain further and further up the throat. There is a very tiny running in delta H as you send the brain further back. So since delta H, once fixed, remains fixed at 10 to the minus 5, you don't get a terminal pitch. So that's the story with DBI UV model. Now, of course, one should really look at the intermediate case where you have a finite, a high value of beta, maybe 100 or so, and you leave the brain somewhere up on the potential. It starts slow rolling, but picks up a high speed, and therefore goes from KKLMMP slow-roll regime to DVIL relativistic regime. And it turns out for that for the intermediate case as well, you never get delta H greater than 1. But here I'm just quoting the result work done by Sega Chandera and Henry Tai and simulations. So we looked at simplest KKLMT, we looked at simplest DVIUV model, we combined them, and the claim is that delta H is not 1, as long as you stay in the throat, and eternal inflation is not possible in the simplest scenarios. Now let me quickly mention the DVIIR model, which was suggested by Xingran Chen. It has two throats, and the anti-brain, anti-D3 brain, sits at the tip of one throat, while the D brain, it originates at the tip of the other throat, moves up the throat, and wanders into the bulk, and comes back down this throat. Okay? Inflation happens when this brain is moving up this up this throat, and the D-sigma energy is simply sourced by the tension of the anti-D3 brain, because we know that as long as you leave an anti-D3 brain by itself, it has a positive tension that will source inflation. Now again, the speed of light limit prevents this D3 brain from moving up very fast and coming down and annihilating this guy. That gives you the sufficient number of inputs. If you look at the details of these models, I should point out one thing. Beta is negative in these models. That helps you help this guy move up this throat. And you don't get many EFOs when this brain is moving down the throat of the anti-brain. So most of the EFOs come when this guy is moving up this throat. And then you ask, where does this brain come from? It comes from brain flux annihilation, as proposed by the wall, Verlinde and Kachru, and that happens at the tip of this. Now, to get eternal inflation, you should find some region of this throat where delta H exceeds 1. Since I said you get very few EFOs here, most of the EFOs come from here, so most of the 60 EFOs are somewhere here, so you should look at some region where delta H exceeds 1. Now it turns out that when you look at the details, what happens is, there are two scales. One is the value of the Hubble at the D3 brain, and the other is the string scale at the D3 brain. Now, remember D3 brain is this guy. The point of the field space where delta H begins to exceed 1 is the point of the field space where the Hubble scale exceeds the string scale. So as soon as you start getting into the regime of eternal inflation, the Hubble scale right at that point exceeds the string scale. Now here I was careless enough to say no inflation, but the question really is, what does it mean to have a Hubble scale that exceeds the string scale? Because if that does happen, then your D-sitter will start popping up closed strings. And you cannot trust your four-dimensional low-energy effective theory anymore. You have to look at the correct stringy picture. So here, one probably cannot make a strong statement that eternal inflation is absent. But one needs to understand the picture more. Now,
what was the source of that negative beta?
Negative beta?
Yeah.
So when these models were proposed, Xingran just took a negative beta. didn't worry about why it's made. And personally, I have never looked at the details. Why it can be. But, so it's very phenomenological. Okay, now, however, after these negative statements, of course, still, it is possible to get internal inflation of the random walk type in different ways. In KTLMMT type scenario, you can, if you can add some structure to the potential, for example, if you have a flat potential extending into the ball, and a part of inflation happens in the ball, then that will support internal inflation of the random walk type. And in multi-throat brain inflation, brain flux annihilation is just a bubble nucleation process. So you will have internal inflation via bubble nucleation. So the main statement really was that in field theory models, it's almost impossible to avoid internal inflation. Whereas here we saw that you can actually avoid internal inflation if you looked at certain parameters of the field space. There's still internal inflation of the random walk type, except that it's actually easier to avoid that compared to field theory. Now let me make some statements about the DBI scenario. In the second slide, I mentioned that to study the motion of the brain or the inflaton, you need to look at a Langevin or a Fokker-Planck equation, simply because the motion of the inflaton is a combination of the classical drift and the quantum fluctuation. So the equation you should look at is the Fokker-Planck equation. Now, the inflaton, of course, is the classical motion of the brain, and the inflaton quantum fluctuation corresponds to fluctuations of the brain position. Now, in the DBI scenario, the brain is moving relativistically. So V is of the order of C. So you have your inflaton classical motion relativistic on which you want to study these quantum perturbations. And it's not at all clear how to set up a Langevin analysis for this problem. Because naively thinking, if this guy is moving close to the speed of light, quantum fluctuation will send it superluminal if I just blindly wrote down the usual Fokker-Planck. So there has to be some modification of the Langevin or the Fokker-Planck analysis, or maybe not, but that's an interesting question that needs further investigation. There's some subtlety here. And in the paper with my collaborators, there's some statements, but I don't think I'll be off the city of religion. It's unsettled. Now, this is a cartoon which shows you the shape of the brain during internal inflation. There's some spikes here. This is a brain which has internal inflation. And you can see that the brain just gets crumpled. So the question is, what happens to the shape of the brain? DBI description should actually break down at some point when the second derivatives of phi become important. So there are these questions which need to be answered if one wants to study internal inflation for D-brains. Because in these regions, the second derivatives of phi become important, and your DB, this can be, you cannot trust DBI because it's exact only in the first derivative. But maybe when one does simulations, the second orders just get inflated away, in which case you can still trust DBI. Okay, now the conclusion. So we saw that in certain brain inflation models, internal inflation of random walk type is either highly constant or completely absent. Eternal inflation through tunneling will, of course, take place, and one should ask more detailed question about what it really means to tunnel between different stringy vacuum. Now, if future observations select a particular brain inflation model or another, maybe DBI model, then one might be able to rule out eternal inflation, because this is a very optimistic statement. If tomorrow's some observations said DBI inflation as proposed by Kang and Silverstein is the right inflation, then you saw that it's very hard to get internal inflation. But then it's kind of weird as well, because most of landscape allows internal inflation. Somehow you belong to the inflationary model which does not allow internal inflation. That would be a little bit. Okay, I promise this is the last conclusion slide. So there are new features in stringy inflationary models. For example, Langevin analysis of DPI model is something non-trivial, and it's not clear how to even write down the Langevin or the Fokker equation. And brain dynamics is, of course, intimately tied with the evolution of 4D space-time. And Lev Kaufman and others have been doing the simulations about brain folding, what happens when brain intersects with each other, what happens when the second derivatives become important. So such questions need to be visited. And of course, a better understanding of stringy physics will lead to a better understanding of the kernel equation. And so, okay, that's it. No more slides. Thanks.
Questions?
I don't know if this is relevant, but in condensed matter systems, they sometimes think about more complicated Langevin dynamics where you wear both phi dots and phi double dots is important.
Right. So one, this is actually very relevant.
One way you could do that is write it on phase space where you've got first order derivatives for now in two field system and have Langevin dynamics there. I don't know if that maybe would help.
So I and Sarah, we have been in our for boredom time, we go and look at these soft condensed matter books which have these equations for membranes and so on.
Right.
Maybe that's what one needs to look
because
at.
You can get general, the Fokker Planck, when you do the general analysis, you see the Fokker Planck is just a special thing, and you can get like a more general thing where it's the Fokker Planck on the phase space. That depends on the right phi and the momentum conjugate as well. And you can, but basically, like there's a whole analysis you can do there.
Right. The other thing we looked at is, if you just do a Google search for relativistic Langevin, these papers pop up. For example, people like S. Chandrasekhar, they did a detailed study of what happens when you look at relativistic motion. So you have a star, and you have the photon coming out near the surface of the star, and it's undergoing this random motion. So that's a relativistic Langevin motion. But it seems that there was this controversy even there. And there were papers last year and this year in condensed matter physics where they are trying to like resolve these controversies. So just to formulate a covariant Langevin or Fokker Planck equation is tricky using four vectors.
Can you formulate it on the brain system?
Right. If you just
And then boost, you never get a superlimiter because
right.
The additional velocity is always shown.
So that's one of the approaches, but we haven't looked at it anymore. Mm-hmm.
Any more questions? Good night, thanks, Ash.